Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 8, attaining the supreme text number 28. Vedeshu jagneshu tapasu chaiva. Daneshu yat punya palam pratishtam. Adyeti tat saram idam vedetva. Yogi paramam staram upaiti chajam. Vedeshu. In the study of the Vedas. Yagyeshu. In the performance of yagya, sacrifice. Tapasu. In undergoing different types of austerities. Cha, also, eva, certainly, daneshu, in giving charities, yat, that which, punya palam, result of pious work, pratishtam, indicated, adyeti, surpasses, tatsarvam, all those, idam, this, viditva, knowing, yogi, the devotee, param, supreme, stanam, abode, upaiti, achieves, cha, also, adyam, original. Translation of Prabhupada by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Person who accepts the path of devotional service is not bereft of the results derived from studying the Vedas, performing sacrifices, undergoing austerities, giving charity, or pursuing philosophical and fruitive activities. Simply by performing devotional service, he attains all these. At the end, he reaches the supreme eternal abode. Purport. This verse is a summation of the 7th and 8th chapters, which particularly deal with Krishna consciousness and devotional service. One has to study the Vedas under the guidance of the spiritual master and undergo many austerities and penances while living under his care. A brahmachari has to live in the home of the spiritual master just like a servant, and he must beg alms from door to door and bring them to the spiritual master. He takes food only under the master's order. If the master neglects to call the student for food that day, the student fasts. These are some of the Vedic principles for observing brahmacharya. After the student studies the Vedas under the master for a period of 5 to 20 years, he may become a man of perfect character. Study of the Vedas is not meant for the recreation of armchair speculators, but is for the formation of character. After this training, the brahmachari is allowed to enter into household life and marry. When he is a householder, he has to perform many sacrifices so that he may achieve further enlightenment. He must also give charity according to the country, time, and candidate, discriminating among charity in goodness, in passion, and in ignorance, as described in Bhagavad Gita. Then after retiring from household life, upon accepting the order of Vanaprastha, he undergoes severe penances, living in forests, dressing with tree bark, and not shaving, etc. By carrying out the orders of brahmacharya, household life, Vanaprastha, and finally sannyas, one becomes elevated to the perfectional stage of life. Some are then elevated to the heavenly kingdoms. And when they become even more advanced, they are liberated in the spiritual sky, either in the impersonal Brahmajyoti or in the Vaikuntha planets or Krishna Loka. This is the path outlined by Vedic literatures. The beauty of Krishna consciousness, however, is that by one stroke, by engaging in devotional service, one can surpass all the rituals and different orders of life. The word idam viditva indicates that one should understand the instructions given by Sri Krishna in this chapter and the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita. One should try to understand these chapters not by scholarship or mental speculation, but by hearing them in association with devotees. Chapter 7 through 12 are the essence of Bhagavad Gita. The first six and the last six chapters are like coverings for the middle six chapters, which are especially protected by the Lord. If one is fortunate enough to understand Bhagavad Gita, especially these middle six chapters, in the association of devotees, then his life at once becomes glorified beyond all penances, sacrifice, charities, speculations, etc., where one can achieve all the results of these activities simply by Krishna consciousness. One who has a little faith in the Bhagavad Gita should learn Bhagavad Gita from a devotee, because in the beginning of the fourth chapter is stated clearly that Bhagavad Gita can be understood only by devotees. No one else can perfectly understand the purpose of Bhagavad Gita. One should therefore learn Bhagavad Gita from a devotee, not from mental speculators. This is a sign of faith. When one searches for a devotee and finally gets a devotee's association, one actually begins to study and understand Bhagavad Gita. By advancing the association of the devotee, one is placed in devotional service, and this service dispels all one's misgivings about Krishna or God, and Krishna's activities, form, pastimes, name, and other features. After these misgivings have been perfectly cleared away, one becomes fixed in one's study. Then one relishes the study of Bhagavad Gita and attains a state of feeling always Krishna conscious. In the advanced stage, one falls completely in love with Krishna. The highest perfectional stage of life enables the devotee to be transferred to Krishna's abode in the spiritual sky, Goloka Vrindavan, where the devotee becomes eternally happy. What's the problem? You don't like the verse? What's that? Vedeshu dagneshu tvasu chaiva daneshu yet punyapalam prativyam adeti tasaramidam viditva yogi param stanam upaiti chajam. Person who accepts the path of devotional service is not bereft of the results from studying the Vedas, performing sacrifices, undergoing austerities, giving charity, pursuing philosophical and fruitive activities. Simply by performing devotional service, he obtains these, and at the end he reaches the supreme eternal abode. The Vedic process has two parts. One is the process of becoming liberated from the modes of nature, and the second part is performance of devotional service. The Vedic culture is generally meant for helping the ordinary people rise up from the modes of ignorance to the mode of passion, to the mode of goodness, through the process of following varna and ashram, which are mentioned in the purport. And then it's hoped that when one is in goodness, he understands everything properly, then he can take up devotional service. Now, of course, we've taken up devotional service, and we may not realize that devotional service includes within it the varnashram system, mainly because we never followed the varnashram system. Therefore, we don't really understand what the varnashram system is, so we don't know what it includes or doesn't include. For instance, here it says, Vedeshu dagneshu tapasu chaiva daneshu yat punya pralam prativyam. That simply by doing devotional service, you look pretty tired. Maybe you should stand up. But don't fall down. That we shouldn't think, as we read in the Vedas or we read in the Bhagavatam, that people perform sacrifices because they want to go to the heavenly planets, or like Hiranyakashipu to austerity to live forever, or we want to kill our enemies, whatever. Whatever we think is the Vedic culture. But actually, these are not really the purpose of the Vedic culture. The Vedic culture, as outlined here, is, as Krishna says in the 17th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Abhayam sattva samushudhira jnana yoga vyastiti dhanam dhammas cha jagnas cha swadhyatapa arjavam. So, brahmachari life, Krishna gives one word, swadhyaya, to find out who we are. That's brahmachari life. Find out who we are. Self-study. If we don't know who we are, then everything else is a waste of time. In other words, if you taught when you're 5 years old that you're eternal soul, you probably believe it. And when you taught when you're 30 years old that you're an eternal soul, you won't understand what they're talking about. So brahmachari life, brahmachari guru kule. So they're not just told you're not this body. You're just a spirit soul. The body is just a changing dress, meant to grow old. No, they're actually put into a position, a situation, where they don't know anything else but austerity, tolerance, obedience, etc., etc. They learn by practical experience that they're not their body. Now we come to a class, we hear we're not the body, then afterwards we take prasadam and then go to the movies. It's not us, of course, other people. They come to our class and then they take prasadam, they have a little kirtan, then go to the movies, go home, and who knows what happens. This is not the way of realizing you're not the body. That's called armchair speculation. They can come for a million years and hear you're not your body, but unless they change their activities, they'll never realize it. And that never goes beyond the page in the Bhagavad Gita and in the book. So therefore, brahmacharya guru kule vasandanta hitera rupam vasarvan achavanicho guru surida saurida. They have to live in the forest generally, unless the spiritual master calls for them to take prasadam, and they have to fast. They have to be obedient to the spiritual master. They have to the guru. They have to think he's their friend with a firm vow and with a surida, sorida, and a good heart and firm vow. They have to serve the spiritual master. Then learn at the age of five, they don't know anything else. There's no internet. There's no Facebook, there's no movies, there's no magazines, they're just in the forest. What else do they have to do? They want to eat, they better be obedient. Unless they want to eat leaves from the tree, they can't go to the store and buy something. So then they learn the philosophy, they learn it by practical experience. And all they're trying to learn is that they're not their body. They don't have a whole big range of subject matter because they learn, generally speaking, they're going to be kshatriyas or brahmins. They learn different sciences along. But the main subject matter is swadaya, or eternal souls. And if they don't learn that in the brahmacharya ashram, then they have to learn dana, dhammas, and yajna in the grihastha ashram. The only reason why people can't learn that they're not their body, that they're a Krishna's eternal servant, is because they're attached to sense gratification. And therefore, they have to perform yajna, they have to perform dana and dhammas. They have to learn how to better control their senses, and they have to better give in charity, and also perform sacrifice to Vishnu, to Krishna. And that they learn that in regulated household life. And if they actually learn the lessons in household life, then they're ready for vanaprastha life. And in vanaprastha life, the main thing to learn is tolerance. If you spend 25 years in household life listening to the screaming of your children, and you work hard in order to maintain the family, and try to satisfy your wife, then you've learned some tolerance, hopefully. Controlling your senses, controlling your mind. And then finally you have to perfect that. The real test is when you go and you don't have all the conveniences of household life. You go on pilgrimage, or at least in the Vedic culture, they go into the forest. Your wife doesn't cook rascals every day for you. You may have thought you learned your lessons in household life, but when you're living, in the Veda culture, when you're in the woods, in the forest, and you're wearing bark. You're eating the berries and the roots from the tree. That's a real test. You have to tolerate the rain. You have to tolerate the heat. You have to tolerate the cold. So many different austerities. And you learn tolerance. And if you become really expert at the tolerance, then you become eligible to take sannyas. And you depend completely on Krishna, but you become fearless. Your heart is only thinking of Krishna's name, form, quality, and pastimes. You become sattva shudhir, and you see everyone and everything in relation with Krishna. You get jnana yoga. Vyavastiti. So when it says that you obtain the results of everything, it means that you obtain the results of these things. You understand you're eternal servant of Krishna. Your life is meant for charity. You've controlled your mind and senses. Your life is meant for sacrifice. And you're learning complete tolerance so that you're always meditating upon Krishna. And that's perfection of the Veda culture. Now, if someone thinks I'll chant Hare Krishna and I'll make a lot of money, I'll become famous, I'll become powerful, you got the wrong idea. what the whole Veda culture is meant for. It's meant for exactly the opposite, to become detached from all those things. They may come automatically, but that's not the aim of practicing the process of Krishna consciousness or accepting devotional service. Now, if we accept devotional service and we're still attached to the material concept of life, we can't control our senses, we're still greedy, we're not willing to sacrifice for Krishna, we're certainly not tolerant, we're fearful, our hearts aren't pure, and we don't even know what's going on. We don't even know how we got here. Then we have a few things to learn on the way of chanting Hare Krishna. Because the chanting Hare Krishna can help one elevate oneself as if it's done offenselessly. So rather than try to take all these different processes and concentrate on realizing that we're not this body, giving charity and sense of mind control and sacrifice and austerity, rather than trying to concentrate on the individually, we try to chant Hare Krishna offenselessly. And then automatically, these other better, good qualities should develop. And if they're not developing, it means we're not chanting Hare Krishna offenselessly. So what's the solution? Chant Hare Krishna offenselessly. And at the same time, try to see where our offenses are. When we talk about, because there are 10 offenses, and a lot of them have to do with inattentiveness. Not only when we're chanting, it's not that for 23 hours a day we're going to be spaced out, or 22 hours a day we'll be spaced out, and then for 2 hours we're going to try and concentrate. Good luck. If we're spaced out for the other 22 hours, when we're chanting, that's all we remember is all our space activities for the last 22 hours. And it's not that, to blaspheme the devotees, it's not that when we're chanting, suddenly I'm going to think kindly of the devotees, and for the rest of the day I'm envious of them, thinking, not even believing that they're really devotees, or even trying to be devotees. So we have to practice during the day also, when we're not chanting our rounds, we have to practice avoiding the 10 offenses. Otherwise, what is the meaning of avoiding the 10 offenses? For 2 hours a day I'm an angel, and for the rest of the day I grow horns. No one has to practice, hopefully, avoiding the 10 offenses throughout the whole day. Of course, we should know what the 10 offenses are. Otherwise, how will we avoid them? And it's not only 2 hours a day or 3 hours a day. We have to learn how to practice it for the whole day. And then our chanting will become powerful enough that we'll be able to experience Krishna enough so that we'll become austere and tolerant. We'll be able to become generous and be willing to perform sacrifice for Krishna for the Sankirtan movement. So these things will develop if we try to chant Hare Krishna offenselessly. and at the same time help engage in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's missionary work. Then we don't have to go into the forest and wear twigs, eat the leaves and the berries. We can take prasadam and still advance in Krishna consciousness. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions?
Hare Krishna. I'm just wondering, is there any time period that we can measure if we chant offenselessly? For example, if I chant offenselessly, and for how long then I should expect to measure if I'm chanting?
Well, you chant, I mean, there are different degrees. There are three stages of chanting. There's Namaparad, Namabhas, and Shudanam. Now we can be in any one of those stages at any moment. It's not that, I've reached, you reach the stage of Sudanam and suddenly, the clouds open up. The demigods throw a little certificate down. Says, Sudanam. Wow, Sudanam, all right. Bhavanam's next, Or we Namaparat buzz, Namaparat, and the door, and the floor opens up. Oh, whatever. Namaparat. Happens to the worst of them. No, we can be on any stage at any moment. Generally speaking, as we advance, we avoid the lower stages and aspire for the higher ones. But one can chant Shudanam, or at least Namabhas, immediately, if we just try to concentrate and chant, calling out to Srimati Radharani and Krishna like a child calling for its mother. And how do we know? Because bhakti parashanu vyaktir anyata trika ekakala prapadamanasya tashnatasus tushti pushti shudapaya nukasa. Basically speaking, you become just like when you eat a meal, no one needs to give you a certificate to say that you ate the meal. You should experience three things. Namely, detachment from hunger, satisfaction, and growing strength. So if we chant offenselessly, then we should be able to see things better in relation to Krishna. We should become detached from the things that draw our minds away from Krishna. We should feel loving, greater love for Krishna and everyone and everything in relation to Krishna. That's the sign of offenseless chanting. Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Ash, regarding this training and study of the Vedas, should result in formation of character.
Yes.
And
Percented yatra.
So it appears from the commentary that the best or most suitable period for character formation is 5 to 25.
That's right.
So what about all others? Because majority of us came after that period, probably more.
I answered that yesterday. It says in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Third chapter. Lust is only the perverted reflection of love of God, which is natural for every living entity. But if one is educated in Krishna consciousness from the very beginning, that natural love of God cannot deteriorate into lust. When love of God deteriorates into lust, it is very difficult to return to the normal condition. Nonetheless, Krishna consciousness is so powerful that even a late beginner can become a lover of God by following the regular principles of devotional service. So from any stage of life or from the beginning of understanding its urgency, one can begin regulating the senses in Krishna consciousness, devotional service to the Lord, and turn lust into love of God, the highest perfectional stage of human life. Better late than never. But the chanting helps.
But does this character develop automatically by performing sadhana, No. Or should be some kind of a curriculum and training and...
That's right.
Okay.
If it had happened automatically, we would have all been back to Godhead by now. No, nothing happens automatically. What do you know happens? You know, you go to the spiritual world, does the whole spiritual world happen automatically?
Degradation.
No,
degradation.
What's that?
Degradation happens automatically.
Well, that takes some endeavor. Planning. The leaders of society aren't degrading people automatically. They have a whole plan in order to do that. No, one has to, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Maya Vesha Mano Yemam Nityukto Pasate. Maya Vesha Mano Yemam. That's right. Maya Man Adatsva Maya Buddhi Niveshaya Nivashi Shashi Mam Eva Aturavam Nishamshaya. That Maya Man Adatsva, just fix your mind upon me. Maya Buddhi Niveshaya, and engage all your intelligence in me. Thus you'll live with me always without a doubt. But if you can't do that, that requires determination and practice in order to do that. Therefore, atachitam samadhatum, the sakshma simayistiram, abhyasena yogayana tatomam ischantun dhananja. If you cannot do that, then follow the regular principles of bhakti yoga. In this way, try to develop the desire to attain me. So the whole idea is to develop a desire to obtain Krishna. You can do things mechanically and go nowhere. How to develop the desire to obtain Krishna, that's the essence of it. Mm. That hankering for Krishna consciousness. Tatra loya mulam ekalam. Let's see. Krishna bhakti rasa bhavita mati. What's the next one? Krishna bhakti rasa bhavita mati. Kriyatam katopi labhyate. Tatra loya mulam ekalam. Janma koti sukritarna labhyate. That's our sloka for bhakti yoga. That bhakti yoga is a process of developing tatra loyam, greed to obtain Krishna, desire to obtain Krishna. If one can obtain that somewhere, then one should go and try and get it. That's the whole idea. What was the first line of that verse again? Tatra loyam uyam ekalam janma koti sukritarna labhyate. That's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. What's the first word? What was the first verse? I said, Krishna bhakti. Krishna bhakti rasa bhavitamati. So bhakti yoga means to be absorbed in rasa of Krishna consciousness. Kriyatam tatra loyam ekalam. Is that right?
Jadi kutopi
labhyate. Krishna, I have to say that verse a little more. Krishna bhakti rasa bhavitamati. Wherever you can find it, try to obtain it. Tatra loyam uyam ekalam. That Krishna consciousness is the development of desire or greed to obtain Krishna. Tatra loyam uyam ekalam janma koti sukritarna labhyate, which is only obtained after many births of pious activity. So that's what we're trying to get absorbed in remembering Krishna, basically speaking. And the process of doing that is to develop our greed for doing that, our desire to do it. So the process of, especially these five powerful processes, that's what we're trying to absorb our mind in. So we get a taste for remembering Krishna and serving Him. It's not mechanical. We can put our mind anywhere. It takes desire to focus it. We have to have some experience. Generally speaking, without getting a higher taste, then we don't believe there's a higher taste. So unless we strive hard and work to get a higher taste and Krishna sees we're sincere, he gives us a higher taste. It's all in paper, the higher taste. They should make the paper, you know, edible, and then maybe we can get a higher taste by eating it. Have a chocolate Bhagavad Gita. Care about Bhagavad Gita. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grandharaj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.